NOP host Chris Bashan recently relocated from Chicago to Los Angeles, but before leaving, he recorded a series of nerdy topics with some of his best guests and friends. These are their stories. And we are back. I have another guest here on the mic with me, Sean Okerberg. Hi, Sean.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm good. How are you doing?
So you've been on the show a lot.
Sure.
And what are we talking about? What are we rapping about today on the mic, my friend?
Today we are talking about motion capture acting and the kind of the technology and where we're going, where we've been. That kind of stuff, because I figured it was something that you and I both have a little bit of experience with and could talk about with a little bit of expertise.
Yeah, it's weird. We have a little experience. For those who kind of already, maybe if you've listened to past episodes, which you should.
Oh, totally go back.
Totally go back. We have dropped more than one occasion. Sean and I are both actors and performers here in the city of Chicago. And weirdly enough, we met doing motion capture for video games.
Yeah.
Most notably Mortal Kombat and Injustice, mm-hmm. which you nerd kids may have heard of those things.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, we met doing that years ago. And so I feel we can speak with some authority on the subject of motion capture. We're not
Absolutely.
Andy Serkis.
I mean, no.
But I have opinions.
Only Andy Serkis is Andy Serkis.
I know, right? I have opinions about Andy Serkis.
Oh, sweet. I want to hear them.
Yeah. So how do you want to start this discussion? This is such a... esoteric discussion?
Is it?
I don't know if I'm using that word right.
Yeah, I don't know either.
Sorry, my cat's going to totally kiss you. He's been kissing every guest who comes in here.
Sweet. Well, we can talk about like our first experience with it and how it relates to other kind of acting that we've had or we've done before and like our like getting to know it and getting to understand it. Like, I definitely have thoughts on that.
Well, I think so if we go back to the beginning, I think it's kind of fitting that we met performing in Mortal Kombat,
mm-hmm.
Because Mortal Kombat specifically, I feel, gained notoriety, one, because of how violent it was in the 90s, but also for digitizing actors their content. It wasn't pixel generated. It was actually actors who are actually still here in the city of Chicago. You can come and meet them. They do events at a Galloping Ghost Arcade, I believe, nearby from time to time. They digitized these actors, these martial artists, for the game, and they've kind of stuck with that style ever since then. And obviously technology has developed, and now they actually do like what I think people would recognize as actual motion capture, which is the suits, the, you know, balls on the suit, the camera recording movement and whatnot.
And I think that digitizing real people led to that feeling of the violence in the game, because there was violence in other games, but like it became so much more visceral when it looks like when they just blended in real people with pulling out spines and stuff like that. And mm-hmm. beyond just the gore, it was so much more striking than it would be if it was just cartoons, you know, killing each other.
You know, like I think as games developed, like you needed motion capture to develop with it.
Mm-hmm.
Like I recently replayed Knights of the Old Republic.
Okay.
And I would have to look that up actually, but I don't think that game was motion captured. Mm-hmm. Like when I can tell when a scene has not been motion captured.
Yeah.
You know, there's just like a certain stiffness.
Yeah.
And there's a certain,
mathematics go into moving and like, no weight to it.
Mm-hmm.
I
remember an animator once said to me, like, the hardest part about one of the most beneficial things about motion capture is a sense of weight. Like a sense of weight is very hard to animate
mm-hmm.
by hand, and you can see it. So I think it's such a cool art form, and obviously it's permeated film. I wonder if it started in film or games first. Probably games.
Yeah, I would think games. Like, the first time that I can, like, speaking to movement and looking like things are really moving, like humans move, I remember on PS1 watching Resident Evil, the first Resident Evil game.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those cutscenes, just the way they moved, and right, honestly, I don't know for sure that was motion capture, but I'm assuming it was because it was, you know, night and day difference between the way that they were moving. And like, what I remember, one of the characters like hearing something behind them, and just the way they turned around looks like the way a human turns around, mm-hmm. versus just like taking something and rotating it.
Yeah.
And the way you shift on your muscles and all that kind of stuff. So that's the first time I remember going like, oh, movement is really like a big part of the way we, you know, the way we see this picture. Or
yeah,
this.
I'm trying to remember like the, I'm sure like I had been watching it in games potentially before this movie came out and just didn't realize it. I mean, this is really horrible, but well, this isn't horrible. I don't know why I said that. Gollum is obviously, I think, the go-to, you know, mocap standard. The bar was set when Lord of the Rings came out.
Right.
You know, and I'm sure we'll talk about Andy Serkis at various points during this podcast, but his portrayal of Gollum and specifically how they did it looks great.
Yeah.
You know, like I've seen behind the scenes footage of him on set in a white suit, and what a physical role.
Yeah.
Like motion capture is already physical, mm-hmm. but Gollum specifically, this hunched over creature,
right.
like that demands.
Well, telling a story of somebody who's like no longer is so twisted and mm-hmm. so just contorted that physically it has to be contorted and twisted, and he did that so amazingly, and he did it on set in order to help the scene be real and help the mm-hmm. other actors, you know, have that sense of what they were dealing with,
which, yeah,
you know, besides just okay, we'll get Gollum in post, like it was mm-hmm. there and real and something to play off of.
Yeah. And what I was going to say, which is what made me laugh earlier, is I think there was an opportunity missed with Star Wars, specifically with Jar Jar Binks.
Okay.
You know, I think
was the like, opportunity to not have Jar Jar Binks?
The opportunity was not to. And now our Jar Jar Binks podcast begins in earnest. He, Ahmed Best, I believe is his name, okay. The actor who plays Jar Jar Binks. It's really not him. It's more to George Lucas. Like, you had a chance. You're going to put this alien character up front and center. Mm-hmm. You know, the last time Star Wars did this was Yoda.
Yeah.
And was very successful with Frank Oz's performance. And Lucas just didn't take that route with it. Yeah. You know, like Ahmed Best, I believe, was on set most of the time in a Jar Jar outfit.
Yeah.
And I think it would have been a more interesting choice to like make this thing a very like alien creature and either do it with puppetry or do it with budding motion capture effects. Because yeah. Gollum was not that far after. It was like 3 or 4 years, which in tech time is a long time, but it wasn't that long. And I think they missed the boat.
In other words, they should have done motion capture instead of just straight up animation.
They should have done motion capture, but I think by doing motion capture, they could have done something more interesting with Jar Jar.
Yeah. Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
I think because they didn't, and right. they had a person on set, they kept him pretty close to human,
yeah.
except in his speech, mm-hmm. you know, and in his head, like right. his CGI head.
Right. Animating the tongue and the yeah, mm-hmm. all that. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. This is why I mentioned, like, Frank Oz and Yoda,
mm-hmm.
Which I guess is puppetry is the father or mother of motion capture in a weird way.
Huh. Yeah.
Right?
Uh-huh.
I don't know. I think that's yeah. right.
No, I hear you. Like, it's, I think mask work is closer to motion capture than puppetry. Because mm-hmm. puppetry is so outside of yourself. Like, you're really, you're using something entirely outside of your own body to portray this character. Whereas, you're using your body to do motion capture. Mm-hmm. Like you're performing with your own physical, like you're not thinking of your body as a puppet. You're thinking, you know, you're just being the character.
Can you think of an example of mask work that might be like
recognizable
to the masses? I feel like I'm asking you a theater, like professor 101 question.
Right. And the whole reason I brought up mask work is because that is definitely the way I thought of it when I first started doing motion capture way back with this game called Wheelman, which was awesome. And it still looks pretty great for as old as it is. Because I have done mask work before. And so the mask work that I've done was Commedia dell'arte, which I don't know how much people really know the form, but it's kind of half masks. It's not a full mask, but you know, there's mask work all through history, from you know Native American stuff to Greek, absolutely, and Japanese theater, and you know Chinese theater, and you know, something about putting on a mask that just lets you create a whole new character just by changing your face. And that's the way I felt with motion capture at first, because it was like, as an actor, you have all these different resources, you have all these different tools, you have your voice to tell the story of the character, you have your face, your body, your, you know, all the way you look, all this kind of stuff. And in motion capture, you take away the face, you take away the voice, because the voice, at least the work that we've done, is the voice is pre-recorded by somebody else entirely. So you have to match that voice. But you still have an opportunity to tell where this character is at emotionally and what every word means, just by subtle movements of what your body is doing or your head is doing, without, you know, looking sad with your face or, you know, or whatever. You have to use everything besides those.
Do you think motion capture is more successful in portraying the strange and the alien and the monstrous, or do you think it's more successful when you're a very human character? Because like you mentioned Wheelman, which I'm assuming you were playing like thugs and actual like people versus Vin Diesel. Mortal Kombat earlier, Diesel, which has like monsters like Baraka or Goro or whatnot. Like, where do you think motion capture is really useful and succeeds, and where do you think it is not?
Yeah, well, I think it's, I think early on it was probably most useful for playing those alien characters, because, like we were talking about the recent Netflix show Lost in Space, and it has the robot, and it's obviously somebody in a suit, and to me, it always looks like somebody in a suit, and I never quite got away from that. Whereas if you motion capture it, you can still play this character, the physical essence of this character, and have it look completely unhuman. And so I think that's the necessity of motion capture, right? Like Gollum. You can't play it. If it was just Andy Serkis in a Gollum makeup, it would have been, you know, even though it was the same actor doing the same stuff, and his voice and his face and all that kind of stuff, it still would have not looked anywhere. It wouldn't have been as compelling to me as this Gollum character, because he never could have been exactly that shape. He never could have been that pathetic, that scrawny, that, you know, that, which is all the essence of
but
Gollum.
He really, like, he, even though he's not those things, he physically like leans into those things 10,000%.
Right.
I versus, like, here's an example. I think Josh Brolin is a great actor. His Thanos was very human. I feel they didn't. And I don't know if this was his choice or it was the capture technique or whatnot, but I feel like there was a certain alien weight missing about Thanos.
Okay.
Or to go back even further, like James Spader with Ultron. Like both of these actors like physically portrayed and mo-capped these characters on set, but they, even though they were alien or robotic characters, they were very close to human. And I think they missed a chance. You could also argue the characters don't need this, but in Ultron's case, I would argue he does. That you need a bit of the alien and inhuman in the physicality more. This is where I think like Andy Serkis and Doug Jones, who plays fish out of water, Shape of Water.
Oh, okay.
He plays the fish man.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
or he
yeah.
plays the fish man ape save.
Right, yeah.
In Hellboy, or the, you know, like he has these kind of really great, carefully chosen movements that he does. He was in Pan's Labyrinth. None of that's mo-capped.
Right.
That's all like him on set, but like I believe him and Andy Serkis exist in this similar area of physicality that I feel James Spader and Josh Brolin do not.
Well, see, I would dare say that has less to do with motion capture and more to do with the type of performer. Kind of like what you're saying.
Sure.
Like it's Josh Brolin and Ultron, James Spader, they're like, I think of them as film performers, and film is so like, so about the face and so about, you know, this internalizing, and, you know, from chest up kind of shots that not a lot of physicality goes into it versus clowning or versus, you know, more theatrical work where people have to, you know, communicate like these physical gestures back to a, you know, a 1,000-seat theater or whatever, like being able to make it a little bit larger. And like, I had done theater for years before I ever did like some film work. And then it was, film work was like all about, okay, I've got to tap down like all these acting instincts of going large. I have to tap those down because the audience isn't, you know, 100 feet away. The audience is right in your face. And so I think that, that's the brilliant thing about Andy Serkis and others is that they can use their body in weird alien ways. Like, and they, I think that comes from clowning, that comes from, you know, mime work and that kind of stuff versus, you know, more traditional American movie making, which Josh Brolin is, you know, he's a good actor, but, you know, I don't know how he would be in a, like playing something on stage or, you know, doing,
I'm sure he must have done stage work.
I would guess.
But he, and like to backpedal a little bit in case Josh and James are listening.
Yeah, if you guys are brilliant and we love you, don't hurt us.
Well, and like you mentioned the facial capture, like I think specifically with Thanos and to a lesser extent Ultron, the face is really what they were going for.
Okay.
You know, like the facial capture, especially on Thanos, is really, really great. And we may talk about this later, but I feel facial capture technology and motion capture technology have evolved at kind of different rates.
Oh, totally. Yeah, yeah, I hear you.
Because you definitely had mocap, I feel, before you had facial scan kicking in.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think both Ultron and Thanos, you know, facial-wise look fantastic.
Yes, I agree. There is one moment, though, and if I could spoil a little bit of the most recent Avengers.
Infinity War!
Infinity War, skip ahead. If you don't wanna, if you haven't seen it yet. There's a moment where Gamora is thrown off this cliff.
Spoiler, no! Gamora!
That's right, I said spoiler after I said the thing, which makes no sense. So he throws her off the thing, and then it cuts back, like it shows her falling for a while, and then cuts back to him. And to me, that moment lost the weight of it, because it was good, and it was, you know, you could tell some of his pain, but it wasn't as deep as I think it would have been if it was an actual human face, or, you know, it would have worked if it just cut to Josh Brolin, but it was just,
you mean,
not
actually cut to Josh Brolin.
Yeah, they should have just cut to
just
Josh Brolin. If they would have cut to somebody's real face, that would have had more impact, and that would have been a great choice. But the way it wasn't as deep as it could have been, instead of like either watching her, you know, continue to fall, or watching her die or something like that. Instead, we saw a, it just wasn't quite there for me. And maybe that's just because facial capture isn't
the, it's getting close.
It's so close. It's getting close. There's some amazing stuff that's happening.
I do,
especially,
I think,
at NetherRealm Studios.
NetherRealm Studios.
They're brilliant.
Yeah, they're the I think we're a little more forgiving of facial capture in video games, first off. Cause typically, like in video games, you're having artificial characters living and working in artificial environments.
Yeah.
Whereas film has the huge obstacle of, we have to take this CGI character and put him in the real world now.
Yeah.
And despite like all the special effects in Infinity War, like there are definitely times where the mocap or facial cap does not match up to that world.
Yeah.
It just doesn't look right.
Oh yeah.
Which is, you know, weird, because those movies have a ton of money. Versus like,
well, I think it's just because the technology is not like, when you're going back and forth between, like you said, between a real person and a CGI person, if they're supposed to both be human, if they're supposed to both be in the same boat, it just doesn't look quite the same. And maybe at some point we'll get to the point where you won't be able to tell the difference. But like, the reason I think Gollum works so well is because it's a little alien, like it's a little weird. Whereas Thanos is basically human except bigger and a bigger wavy chin.
Nut chin?
Yeah.
Grimace.
And, Grimace. He's evil Grimace.
Steroid Grimace?
Yes. Grimace got ripped and he's pissed. So I think that because he's not supposed to be the same as or he's so drastically different than the hobbits that it works a lot better. Whereas, yeah, when it's all just motion capture, when it's all animated like a video game, then you're in it, and there's no back and forth between.
There is one I do think, like, and this came out a few years ago. Have you seen the Planet of the Apes trilogy?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's
like,
pretty great.
That's an example of like taking a creature, a monkey, an ape, which is all motion captured through Andy Serkis and a bunch of different people. Like the facial capture for Caesar,
right,
in addition to the physical capture that he did, like, looks fantastic.
Absolutely.
And that is a creature like constantly interacting with the real world and real people. And horses and like everything.
And I think the reason it works is because it's not a human. Like, it's because it is different than the humans that you're comparing it to. Like, if you would have had an actual chimpanzee walk up next to Caesar, then I think it would take you out.
You think
I think it would be a little weird. But because it's because all of them are this same thing, and, you know, maybe I've been tricked, and, you know, half of them were actual chimpanzees. I don't think that's true.
Acting monkeys.
But I don't think that's true. But they, because it was all of them, you know, look the same. They all are different and unique. Mm-hmm. But there's not, like, the humans are humans, and the monkeys are monkeys.
I can't believe you said that.
How dare you? Get out.
Yeah, I was just thinking about Benedict Cumberbatch, like, actually physically doing the role of Smaug. Like, he did the facial capture, but he also did the body performance of it.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting to me that he is trying to portray something that is completely inhuman.
Yeah.
And I would argue really succeeding. I thought Smaug was the best part of those 20-hour-long yes, prequel trilogy of The Hobbit.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It was great, and it was, you know, and while some of the facial stuff is not necessarily there yet, I do think that there's amazing stuff going on, like Smaug and being able to have a dragon face that looks like it's thinking things through, that it's going through these emotional, you know, beats and whatnot, and and I think that does go to the skill of the actor.
So what do you think, like, what do you want to see for motion capture? Like, is it heading in the direction that you want it to? Do you want it, like,
I mean, I think so. Like, with any kind of CGI stuff, the things that I like the most is when it enhances performance, and finding that balance, because I think that can be tricky. And, you know, you get these like CGI just messes, like I'm thinking of Wonder Woman, which is a movie that I really, really liked until the end became this just like this mess of CGI and cartoony stuff and whatnot. And it's funny because I also really like the artwork that people working in that medium can do, and like Pixar and, you know, and stuff like that. And you can create incredible animation using computer generated animation. And it's amazing. It's just when you're kind of flip flopping back between that and film or that and actual people, it's, I feel like I'm happiest when it is a lighter touch, when it just kind of enhances what's going on, when it takes what can't just be done by an actual performance and do it that way. Like Star Wars does so many, like, started doing so many characters that were these CGI things, whereas, like...
And now they've really backed off from
and,
that.
And they have, and they, like, even Darth Maul, which I thought was a really cool character, even though he didn't say anything, it's because it was a person in makeup. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, they didn't try and, like, oh, but we're going to give him a crazy head thing that pulsates, or, you know, some crazy CGI thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's... Yeah, it's that balance, and I think motion capture, either using to enhance something that isn't human in a movie, or when it's just all like video games, when it's all computer generated, giving that weight, giving that sense of actual human movement to characters.
So if Yoda is the king measuring bar performance for puppetry,
yeah.
Although I would argue that the Jabba puppet is more intricate and more successful in its limited time, even, but that's not anything against Frank Oz. It's just
right. It's Jabba's also very amazing.
Yeah.
He's so gross, and he's just a rubber puppet.
What would you say is like the gold standard performance for mocap, both in a movie and in a video game?
Video game. I don't know. Because I think all so many of the people I've worked with are just freaking amazing. But in a movie, I think it's Gollum. Like, I think that was the first and still kind of the gold standard of motion capture. Mm-hmm. Of, you know, not just helping out in the animation, but really using animation and a physical actor's performance to create a character. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, because it's such a marriage of the two. Like, it's not just, you know, I've heard, animators are just putting makeup on, like, motion capture is just the makeup on the actor's performance. No, it's, it's this incredible artwork, and hopefully it works hand in hand with an actor's performance. Mm-hmm. So it's not just getting out of the way of the actor's performance, and it's the two of them working together to tell this moment of this character and what they're going through in that, you know, in that instant.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so when the two of them work together, it's beautiful. And the question was not about that. It was the best performances.
Yeah, damn it. A lot of people talk about The Last of Us.
I've never played that.
Neither have I. Oh, okay. Well, then we'll just throw that out the window.
Forget that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's. And I think that's a little harder to tell because the technology of video games. I'm about to make a bigger statement than maybe I intend to. The advancement of the technology of video games is so much faster than movies. Like, movies, you have, like, it increasingly gets better and better, but I feel like video games every couple of years are big leaps in technology. And, like, graphics of a game made this year versus a game made just 2 years ago can be really incredible. And it's, and that's amazing. Like, it, and, yeah, so I feel like that's moving even faster. And so to say that one performance, I don't know if I have an answer for that.
No, that's fine.
Yeah. What do you think?
As much of a benchmark as that I think Gollum is, I do think Caesar surpasses him. And okay. I mean, ironically, it's still Andy Serkis.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
No hard feelings to Andy Serkis, but right. I do think Gollum is fantastic, but I think Caesar is almost perfect.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
Like, there are times, and I mean, the technology is years later, but the fact that they were able to take something that exists in the real world and then make it have all of these emotions and give this performance, like, I really was impressed. You know, I think that's actually a little bit harder than taking the alien or taking the monster or the robot or whatever, you know? So I would say Caesar. For video games, I couldn't tell you.
Yeah.
You know, I personally do not play a lot of cutting edge video games.
Mm-hmm.
At least that are, well, I mean, I do play a lot of cutting edge video games, but just not necessarily any that have recently used like spectacular facial capture. Like Breath of the Wild, I think, is one of the best video games out there. And I know for a fact they used mocap.
okay.
for a lot of those scenes, a lot of Link's movements, and like to interact with the world. That's a lot of motion capture of somebody, which I would love to do, by the way. Nintendo, if you're listening, I would love to play Link picking up a vase and throwing it. I can do that. I got that covered, buddy. Climbing a mountain. I'm on that.
All over it.
I'm all over it. I would love to play Mega Man, just shooting things yes. with my gun.
Oh, man, I want to see you play Mega Man.
I want to play Mega Man so bad, Sean. Oh, that's okay. It's all right. One day. One day. Yeah. But I don't know what the gold standard. I've heard a lot of praise thrown upon The Last of Us,
yeah.
which is a game I have not played,
right.
unfortunately.
Would part of the difference be that movies are so much more about the what's going on in the emotional realm, whereas video games are so much more action oriented.
As far as like the performance standing out?
Right. As far as like understanding a performance, because most of the cutscenes in a games are action based, which is still beautiful and artistic and amazing, but it's not what we think of when we think of good acting.
I think we both know, like, people personally who would attempt to say, well, okay, so I'm kind of talking in circles, but I feel like Injustice 2 got a lot of critical acclaim because of its, you know, this is an action-packed story
yeah.
of superheroes and whatnot, but the facial capture and motion capture was so well done, especially in the quiet moments.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's a fighting game, and they're trying to push yeah. a more narrative storytelling, which is good.
Yeah.
That's great. You know, I want that.
Right.
I don't know where I was going with that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I want to say, don't get me wrong, I think that there are beautiful moments in video games, and there's very emotional stuff in video games. Again, I haven't played The Last of Us, but most of it is supposed to be, you know, this emotional story. And there's, like, in all of these different games, in like Injustice and in Mortal Kombat, there's some emotional stuff going on, and I absolutely believe that. But I guess the difference in the forms is I think of movies as a truncated, you know, hour and a half, 2 hours that is mostly about emotional stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, not Avengers. It's more about the action.
Mm-hmm.
But a video game is, you know, 60, 80 hours, you know, with a lot of stuff to fill. And most of the intention of it, I think, is action as opposed to moments. But but like, yeah, absolutely. Injustice is—it's a movie. Like, it really is a movie, and those scenes can be very deep and emotional. But it's broken up mostly by playing an action. Mm-hmm. And I think that when you sit down to play a video game, most of it is you're controlling action, mm-hmm. not you're controlling, you know, interaction.
Mm-hmm. No, that's a good point. I can agree with
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I don't know how this began, but...
I don't know.
But it's interesting. I guess it's just, like, the different ways in which we perceive performance within video games and movies, and it's because they're such different experiences.
They are. Yeah. I mean, like, especially as video games attempt to become more of a cinematic experience, you know, like a cinematic experience is not an interactive experience.
Yeah.
You know, so how do you make something cinematic, but also keep it interactive?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I don't have to answer that question, but
yeah,
I just get to sit back and not worry about that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just want to say one more time that there are beautiful little moments and even in acting it and acting with you, I've seen amazing performances that in these quiet little moments, and I think that those are amazing little gems that I treasure and I look for in a video game. Like, I love, you know, running around shooting stuff in Destiny, but mm-hmm. those little moments of vulnerability are beautiful, and I think the video games are getting more and more of those and becoming more and more complicated and interesting ways of telling story. And like when I was a kid, video games were just a kid's toy. Like, mm-hmm. it was just something for kids, and I never thought that I would still enjoy video games as an adult, but because it's the industry has changed so much and we're it's becoming so much more of a, you know, an artistic form.
Is there a moment in a video game you can think of that affected you emotionally, you know, and was motion capture a part of that moment? I know, right?
It's not really, that's a tough question.
It is a tough question.
Holy moly. Like, I remember I played, it's another zombie one, Telltale?
The Walking
Games,
Dead.
The Walking Dead had some great moments that just took me off guard and I found emotional. Yeah, I don't have anything off the top of my head. I have to think about it for a sec.
That's all right.
Yeah.
Nice. Wow. I remember Final Fantasy X. There's a moment near the end of the game. I won't spoil it too much because I think Final Fantasy X is brilliant. But there's this really heavy emotional narrative moment. And the scene is motion captured where the one character just comes up and kind of hugs the other character from behind. And I won't say what it is, but you probably know what I'm talking about if you've played the game and gotten up to this point. But it's such a great, physically powerful moment. And I know that scene was motion captured. But it's also like the narrative is at its apex and all this stuff. So it's a lot of things going on. But I was like, man, I'm tearing up over here. Oh, my God. And then that one time I went to save Princess Peach in the castle and she wasn't there. I got so angry.
So very angry.
So angry.
Very cool.
You're going to think about that the rest of the night now.
I am. And it's like my mind starts slipping to stuff that I've delved into more deeply, which is stuff I've performed in. Mm. And of course I go over those scripts over and over again. So that it means a lot more to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But just thinking about, like from Injustice, the, Harlequins, you know, reactions to seeing the Joker again. Mm. And the stuff that she went through, I felt like was so emotionally tearing because of the facial capture, because of the motion, the animation and the facial and physical performance were all just solid, and you know, and little moments in those games that we've performed in. Like there was a moment in Mortal Kombat X where Jax and Sonya are she comes to visit him in the barn where he's retired to. He's retired to a farmhouse, but he's in the barn working on a tractor, and it's two characters that just simply need something from each other, and two friends that love each other, and they're asking something from the other that they know that is going to hurt them. And it's such a neat, well-written scene, and it's just such a neat little moment in this bigger storyline of, you know, of Mortal Kombat. It's just, it's great. Little moments like that are awesome.
Cool. Yeah. Well, we have to wrap up, sir. You've been on the show a good long while.
Yeah.
How long have you been doing the show?
The beginning, I think. The first episode I think I was in was Futurama.
Oh, yeah. That was a good episode. Go listen to that Futurama episode.
Oh, it breaks my heart that Futurama isn't on Netflix, and I can't just go to it whenever I don't have something else to watch.
Disenchanted's on Netflix.
Yeah, and it's pretty good.
Okay.
Yeah.
I gotta watch that.
Yeah, you should watch it.
Okay.
It's good to watch. It's cool. I think it's just because I'm not as emotionally invested as the characters as I was with Futurama, which I think maybe it's just they need time to really.
They just need time.
Yeah, yeah.
They need time.
Yeah. These short little 8-episode. You know, seasons are a little too short to really.
Yeah. Well, sir, thank you so much for being on my show.
Thank you.
And hopefully there will be many more down the line.
Yeah, I hope so. It's been fun.
Thanks for listening. Tune in soon for another Chicago story.